Hi, welcome to the Big Unlock podcast. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was great that, I believe you are in Nashville and I was at Vive recently there. We were talking about the snowstorm, which made some people exit early from the conference. So, but I hear today is a very nice day over there.
It's beautiful outside. It's in the 60s. Yeah, we don't usually get snow, but I think we had a lot of heat and excitement and warm energy within Vive. So I think people were able to keep
that's
up.
Awesome. That's awesome. So I'm Rohit Mahajan. I'm the CEO and managing partner at Bigrio and Demo Consulting. And we've had the good fortune of having you on our podcast once before when Paddy was running it. So welcome back. And with that, would you like to introduce yourself to the audience here?
Absolutely. My name is Yaku McChrystal. I'm a pediatric endocrinologist and biomedical informaticist, and I serve as a clinical director of health IT at Vanderbilt University Medical Center here in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's awesome. So yeah, tell us a little bit more that how did you start, in this field of being a physician and what attracted you and how did you move from being a practicing physician into health IT, which is a dry field for many people.
Well, I think the luck of it all is that one of my features and bugs is that I'm a complainer. I am always trying to improve systems around me, but always finding opportunities. And when I came to med school, we were transitioning from paper to the EHR. And as we started using some of the electronic health record systems that we had, I had a bit of a computer science background. And I just saw that there are lots of ways that we could be improving things, the way data flowed, to not have to repeat entry. And I think I just complained to enough people that they said, you should talk to Kevin Johnson. He was the chair of our biomedical informatics department. He said, You think you have some good ideas that can improve things? And I'm like, I think I do. And he was like, You should consider informatics. And through luck and happenstance, I got involved in a lot of really interesting projects in improving the EHR, got my master's in biomedical informatics, and was able to get a position serving in health IT to improve the EHR.
That's awesome. So talk with us here about some of these early experiments in improving EHR, because they've come a long way now, including we were just talking about how Epic is now integrating generative AI into the product itself and the platform itself. So share with us what you have seen so far and where do you think it is going in terms of all these new developments?
Sure thing. So it's funny. I almost want to break up the EHR into the paper era, the classic data entry era, and now the generative era. In the classic era, there are a lot of great concepts and thinking to improve the way we're capturing information, because a lot of the problem was we had these paper records and people would just clone a paper form into a digital form and say, have at it, go ahead and enter all this data in, doctors, and please do a good job on the way and don't miss anything and make sure you can get everything for our quality improvement and billing. And doctors were getting so frustrated. And we tried to come up with different modalities to improve things. We had dictation, and we had a voice technology. We even worked on a project that was a voice assistant for the EHR, kind of like Alexa.
Early on.
You could, ask it things and get information back. We collaborated with Epic on a tool called Hey Epic to be able to just talk with the EHR. But it was just all so complicated architecturally to think of every single way someone might ask a question. But then this generative AI, the large language models, came into the ethos of what we've been doing. And suddenly, the concept of being able to just naturalistically think of things, ask for things, and get things back in the way that we think about them as humans is just part of what we do now. So a huge aspect that has been an improvement that doctors have seen right away is ambient workflows. So being able to just have a regular conversation with your patient, have the AI do all the work of the documenting for you, and generate a note at the end so you can pay attention to the person in front of you, has been such a game changer. We literally get emails from providers saying, this is such a game changer.
And okay, that's great.
Get my notes done on time. I can pay attention to my patients. And the technology is getting better and better every day. So I think this new era, after we've gone through kind of the regular digital EHR era, is going to be some of the most exciting things to help care for our patients.
Yeah, that's good to know. Yeah. So one of the things that you hit upon, ambient, listening and getting into the workflows, I think is resonating across the board. And it's, soon becoming a very key kind of technology which everyone is going to use. What others do you see on the horizon as you look around and, evaluate things in the Gen AI space?
So what I see, I've always been interested in voice technology and being able to converse with technology the way that we're conversing right now. So I think everybody that listens to this podcast has probably played with ChatGPT and Claude and all those other tools. And one of the interesting things I find is the voice mode, where you can ask it questions and get answers back. Any of us who've played with, you know, the older Siri and all that stuff know that sometimes you ask a question, it's like, I'll search the internet for you. And you're like, ah. But with these tools now, you ask it and you get something back. And the thing you get back is related in context to the thing you're asking for. And you can ask follow-up questions. My biggest question is, when will we be able to integrate a workflow like that into the EHR? Because many times when you are trying to put together the story of a patient to figure out what to do next or what's been going on with them, you have the questions in your mind. You're like, when did they last get this test? Or how many times have they been to the hospital for this particular issue? And these are questions you have in your mind. To find them, you have to navigate the EHR. You have to say, well, if I want to figure out how many times they have an encounter, I need to go to the encounter tab and I have to filter for ED visits. And there are these steps that you're taking to answer this question. But what if you could just like ask the question and then have the EHR understand you, because it's it has this transformer architecture in the background that understands, that can interpolate what it is you're saying and feed you back the information. And that takes off so much of the cognitive burden of the work to find the things you need to care for your patient.
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that, because recently I've been talking with several people, including at Vibe. And of course, you know, one of the leaders that I speak with frequently is Dr. Ashish Atreja, and he described it like a headless EMR EHR. So it's basically that the voice interface is coming out in the front, so you can ask it more questions in the natural language. And the EMR EHR is kind of disappearing in the background for the purpose of giving you those answers. So very interesting that you have been following it for such a long time. Let's flip it and see, how does it look from a patient perspective or a caregiver perspective? And we were chatting about patient portals a few minutes ago before we got on the podcast. But yes, so what do you think about how are your patients, pediatric patients and caregivers, embracing this technology, and what are they asking you for?
This has been a very interesting time as a pediatric provider, because our patients are young and their parents are of the early generation. So they are more in tune with technology than I think some of the older patients in internal medicine per se. So I've actually had a patient say to me, hey, I ran this through ChatGPT and this is what it told me. Do you agree? And what my relief was that they asked me for my opinion to see if I concurred with what ChatGPT was giving them. But I don't think it's going to be a long time until we're going to start seeing patients discover more and more that these tools are able to give responses. The only concern that I have is how reliable and accurate these responses are, and what responsibility do we have as a medical organization to work to develop tools where that they can safely ask for questions and can give back more certified, approved answers to answer some of their questions. Also, going back to voice user interfaces on patient portals, they're, you know, navigating things, try to find out information, but sometimes they just have a question. So what would it look like in a future where they can ask questions to their patient portal to say, like, when's my next appointment with Dr. Kuma Crystal, or are in my lab Zach yet, or, oh, hey, I need a refill on my albuterol. Can you put that through for me? So the things just happen kind of in the process. Some of this, you know, the buzzword now is agents. So what kind of interesting agents can we think of that can make our patients' lives easier?
That's awesome that to think that way, because I would love to do that. Ask my patient portal a question and get an answer back instead of first trying to validate my user ID and password.
And that's the thing, because there's so many, there are really interesting ways to authenticate people. Like, it would know your voice. There are other factors, like it knows that, oh, you're nearby because it detects like your phone's nearby. There are just, it's such a fun time to be a nerd right now, because there's so many things that are converging with a lot of technologies we've been thinking about for a long time.
That's great. So how do you approach that? Leads me to my next curious question, is that in a large system like yours, how do you approach innovation and new technologies, and do you measure return on investment? How would you decide your next projects for, let's say, this year or the next year?
Great question. So Vanderbilt is a large academic organization. We have trainees. We have lots of researchers. I think we're all aware of things that have been changing kind of in the atmosphere about funding and things like that. Yes. So we have to be really thoughtful about how we are going to be implementing technology to make sure that it's really serving our mission and really benefiting our providers. But at the same time, we want to be able to try new things, and we want to be able to partner with our vendors to say, hey, we're trying this thing, and we have opinions and we have suggestions on how it can be improved. So I think part of our strategy is to do early pilots so we can help to steer the direction that these tools are going to be materializing when they go to full production. And at the same time, really closely understand what our ROI even means. Like, what are we trying to improve? Do we want to improve turnaround time for notes? Do we want to improve pajama time for providers? Do we want to decrease the number of messages the patients want to send back and forth? Once you can really define what it is you're trying to improve, then you can figure out how to measure it. And once you can measure it, then you can really know if you're making an impact. I think a common concern that people raise with looking at ROI is, well, sometimes the ROI is just that your providers are less miserable, that they're less burnt out. And how do you measure something like that? And I think they're really interesting metrics that we can use to figure out whether the work that we're giving providers is offset by the tools that we're allowing them to use. Some of these tools are not inexpensive, but I think what we're going to find is that providers are going to start having expectations that they're EHR systems are working at a certain state of the art. I work with trainees, and one of my trainees, she's finishing up her training and she was looking for a new organization. And she joked to me, she was like, well, I sure hope they have Ambient there because I'm so spoiled right now. I don't know what I'd do without it.
Yeah.
That was a joke that she made because it's so early days. But I think it's actually going to become a truth where if your organization is not on the leading edge and not providing these tools to improve the way your providers work, people might decide that they want to go to a different organization. So I think the people in the C-suite need to be giving that consideration.
That's great to know. So you touched upon this topic of one of your trainees. So talk with us about education, training, and learning initiatives in the community or at the health system. How do you go about that? How do you level up? And what are some of the things that you can do about it?
Yeah, this is a really, really fascinating part. A lot of the new tools that we have help people become more proficient and help people be more efficient. You help you see patients faster, help you write notes faster. And that's great. But on the other side of the coin, trainees are not just supposed to learn how to be efficient. They're supposed to learn how to practice medicine and how to balance logistics. So we need to find a good balance of teaching them how to use the tools they're going to be using in the future, but not to the extent that we're impeding on their actual learning process. In medical school, I took a course on how to write a good medical note because you have to think through the diagnosis. You have to figure out of all the things the patient told you, what things do you want to keep in the note? What things do you leave out of it because it'd just be too much and that's distracting. You have to do that synthesis and assimilation yourself. Well, we have tools to do that now. Does that mean that we don't teach students what a good note is anymore? Do they just solely rely on something that's generated? These are decisions that we are going to be making and making in real time because no one knows the answer because we're on the pioneering edge of it all. But I think we need to not forget that trainees, being a medical student, a resident, a fellow, is not just about learning how to be efficient. You need to reach a level of proficiency before you need to worry about efficiency. So we need to make sure that we're teaching them the things they know to be good doctors so they can be efficient good doctors eventually.
Yes, yes. Do you weave that into your program over there?
Absolutely. Yes, yes. We have medical students and all sorts of trainees that rotate through. And I love working with trainees because they will ask me questions about things I have never thought about. I'm like, let me go look that up.
Yeah,
Just think of things in very, very new and interesting ways.
That's very cool. So just curious that, you know, many times the focus is on the main system, which is the EMR, EHR system, let's say Epic in this case. And then there's patient portals. It could be MyChart or anything else from the same vendor or different providers as well. What other systems is a physician touching upon during their work, which could be transformed digitally? Any thoughts on any other systems which come into play?
So many. So communication systems in general, a lot of what we do is communicating.
Yeah.
In the medical system, we're still using like fax machines and pagers. Like, we are singly keeping those industries alive. There's so many ways things could be improved about the way we communicate with other medical centers. Interoperability is a huge, huge challenge that we've been trying to tackle for years, where I see a patient, they've been referred to me, their pediatrician has all their records and all their growth charts, and I'm like, boy, I wish I had those too.
Yes.
And they'll fax me something, and I can like pull up a very fuzzy PDF. I'm like, yes. Oh. There's got to be a better way. And we know there is. We have standards like Smart on Fire, where we were integrated appropriately. Everything that they had could magically show up on my growth chart, but so many opportunities there.
That's cool to know. So we've covered a lot of topics here. I would like to ask you if there's any other thoughts you have in closing. And if you were to look in the crystal ball, what do you see coming our way in the next, let's say, 1 to 2 years? And any other thoughts that you would like to share with the audience?
I think my crystal ball is going to be really interested in how care can be delivered more at home and how we can get more insights from patients based on what they're doing outside of the medical center. So I'm a pediatrician, so I care a lot about kids and the fact that they spend most of their time just in school, and the school nurse, that's our main touch point to anything that's going on with like our patients with diabetes. And what tools do we have that can help us better understand what's going on with our patients when they're outside of our medical center walls? So with diabetes, they have these things called continuous glucose monitors that can tell what blood sugars are periodically. What are interesting ways for me to get the information in real time, to get alerts, to get stratified risks of the patients that have the different technologies so I can know how to act? How useful would it be to have information like that available for all sorts of patients, for anyone on their watch, just so we can get a sense of which patients we need to make sure that we're really engaging with so we can help improve their health. And on the patient's side, so they can have a sense of autonomy also to say like, hey, I really understand these details about my health. I'm getting these insights from my environment and I can be proactive about how to stay well.
Great, great. So with that, I think thank you for the podcast, being a guest on the podcast, second time around, like we talked about, and thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I look forward to a third, fourth, and fifth time. We'll talk about
how
we implement our new robot army to take care of our patients.